This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got three sponsors for the show, the first being our good friends at Jam Software, the providers of enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology such as Macs, iPads, iPhone and Apple TV in education. More from them at jamsoftware.com. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Our good friends at Aerohive, makers of cloud-managed controllerless Wi-Fi, and Tap Typing, the app that teaches students to type in the iPad, with structured curriculum and lessons ranging from beginning to advanced, and a typing test for gauging improvement, support for the virtual keyboard and external keyboards. It's a great app for helping your kids learn how to type on the iPad. So Bradley, good evening. What's going on with you?
I am looking at my iPhone 6.
It's that week, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
We did launch our new Playground this week, and so it was actually a really great thing to have that that day because I used the slow-mo feature quite a bit, and I was basically just following my son around as he was getting to play on it the first time. And we also had our friends from GPS, which we had Daniel Milbank on the show a few months back. He sent over one of his employees with their drone and actually filmed some footage, and I'll put a link to some of that in the show notes, but we have actually like a drone footage of our playground, so it's really, really neat.
Very cool. So, did I tell you I got a drone for my birthday?
No, you did not.
A much less sophisticated one than Daniel has, but we were out flying it in the back garden the first, like about an hour after I got it. And I flew it right up, and the wind caught it, as the wind is prone to do in Scotland, and I no longer have a drone. I have no idea where it is. It flew over the house and then just disappeared out of range. And I'm sure it's like hanging on one of the neighbor's antennas or something, but nobody's returned it to me yet.
So you had it like an hour?
I had a drone for an hour once, yeah. It was very impressive what it could do, but I should have kept it for a camera day.
Daniel has a 3D printer as well, so like when they've crashed it, they just print new parts.
That's the future, isn't it?
Which seems very much sci-fi. So, yeah. We had a lot of fun opening the playground. We had the news came out, and they did ribbon cutting with the local Chamber of Commerce, and so that was fun.
Great, good times. Yeah, so I guess there's only one story in town for this week, which is iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus. Lots to talk about, I think, but probably we should set the stage, Bradley, by just talking about where we've both come from. And I think, am I right in saying that we've both come from an iPhone 5?
Yes, yeah. I have. My first iPhone was the iPhone 3G. I didn't get the first two mainly because I was at my previous job. I had a Motorola Q, and so when you have the option at that point of having a free phone or having an iPhone, you take a phone that is paid.
Yeah,
I think nowadays, if like I was given the choice of like a BlackBerry and an iPhone, I would probably I would probably still pay for the iPhone separately because I would not want to carry a BlackBerry around, you know, like on the weekend at night. So yeah, I had iPhone 3G, skipped the 3GS, had iPhone 4, I had iPhone 4S, then I'm going from a 16 gig iPhone 5.
Okay, so my history of iPhone is kind of interesting because, as you know, the iPhones were not available in the UK when they first were available in the US. And what happened, I got a friend from Arizona, he actually bought and shipped me an original iPhone, way before they were available in the UK. And if I remember right, it was a 4 gigabyte iPhone original. If you remember, they came in 4 and 8 when they started. And, I mean, we complain about 16 gigs quite a lot in this show, but try 4. And I was able to, I probably had it for about 3 weeks before I could actually do anything with it, but eventually a jailbreak came out that enabled me to unlock it from AT&T and use it on T-Mobile, as was then in the UK. And so I had an iPhone in the UK way before they were available in this country. So I had an original iPhone. I had an iPhone 3G, 3GS, 4, 4S, and 5. So I had every iPhone up to the 5. And then I skipped the 5S. The 5S is the only iPhone so far that I've not owned. And my decision at that point was really that I didn't want to buy another iPhone until I could buy a bigger one. And of course, now we can, so that's great. So the iPhone 5S so far is the only iPhone I haven't owned, apart from variants like the 5C and so on. And that's kind of been my history with iPhone. And I now have on my desk, right in front of me, a 64 gig, sorry, white silver iPhone 6 Plus.
So I went and waited in line. I think I've recapped my pre-order story. So I got in line about 2:45 a.m. It's the 11th in line. The lady who was first in line had gotten in line at 11 a.m. on Thursday. She's about 65 years old. Mm-hmm. The guy that was number two, probably also in his 60s, he brought his dog. He got in line about 5 p.m. Thursday, and then he controlled back. The guy in front of me was drunk, so that was quite interesting. At some point, he passed out.
Good times.
And I kind of, you know, as the night went on, I kind of kept talking to people. What are you getting? What are you getting? I was the first person in line that said they were getting the regular. You know, at that point, you know, I had really debated, and I think I mentioned on last show, I'd kind of leaned back to the regular. And so, you know, if I had been getting the plus, I probably would have just gone back home because I knew there was just no way they were going to have like 15 pluses.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a big AT&T store, but they had pretty much told me they had been told the 6 Plus was going to be in very, very short supply. You know, I joked to you that day, I think they may have made 100 of them. And so, you know, they just to say it was shipping, they literally had made 100. And so as the night went on, I kept kind of polling people, and most people were saying, you know, a couple of regulars, but most people were saying the 6 Plus. So about 7:30, they came out there and gave us some instructions. They gave us a form to fill out, basically what we were getting. You know, they're really pitching new accessories as well. Like, you know, are you upgrading a line, adding a line? What you're getting new service? What are you doing? They wanted you to go ahead and download my AT&T app. They told me it worked on business accounts. It did not. They also had you go ahead the settings, it even says, does not work on commercial accounts, but whatever. They did say, hey, text this number, and you can get a link, and you can get a trade-in offer. Mm-hmm. They offered me $200 for my iPhone 5, and I just took it. I ended up selling my wife's iPhone for $240 on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the nice thing about doing trade-ins, this is one thing for most people to consider. When you're doing trade-ins, it lowers your taxable amount.
Okay.
Because, you know, you're spending less. And so, like, you know, that's one thing to consider. Of course, my account's tax-free, so I didn't end up paying any taxes. So I get up there, and she asked me, she said, what would you like? I said, I want 64 gig iPhone 6, space gray. Mm-hmm. She said, okay. Went to the back, and she said, all we have in 64 gig is black. So I did not know if like people in front of me had swapped once they realized they didn't have any pluses. Well, I don't know how that all went down. Mm-hmm. I got in the first group of people. I was they let 11 in at a time, so I was the 11th in. So she said we had 128, and so I just went with 128. At that point, you know, you've waited in line since 2:30, 2:45 a.m.
Yep.
I'm certainly not getting 16. I don't know if they had that. I'm certainly not getting that. It's $100. I was getting a trade-in of $200. For my phone, which I paid $200 for 2 years ago. My contract literally was up that day, I believe. And then I get a $100 reimbursement from my school. And mm-hmm. So it literally cost me $100 out of pocket. No tax, no nothing. You know, the activation fee is even on my school's account as well. Mm-hmm. So it literally just cost me $100 out of pocket. So I'll take it. So I ended up with the 128 gig, which I cannot fill up for anything. I mean, I have downloaded quite a bit of music for iTunes Match.
All your photos, all your music.
I could put all my music, but the thing is, my wife and I share libraries, so we have a 45 gig iTunes library. I don't even want, you know, most of it. I probably have like 10 gigs of music on there. I don't sync my photos. They're right now in Google Drive. So like right now, I have downloaded a couple 3 gigabyte movies to my from Plex. Mm-hmm. It says capacity 114 gigabytes, available 87 gigabytes.
Okay, so I mean that's the story you just told there is exactly how I came to have a 64 gig iPhone 5. Is that I wanted a 32 because that was what I had kind of had all the time that they had been available, and because I was getting it not on launch day but a couple of days after, all they had left was 64s. So I said, what the heck, 64? Over here, it's like £70 difference or something. And actually, when it was on contract, it was about £2 a month difference plus an extra £30 up front. So at the end of the day, it was pretty similar. So that's how I ended up with a 64. And I've been very happy with that the whole time. So that's why I stuck with 64 again on this phone. And so far, you know, let me check my settings here. I'm just using it right beside me. But I think what I'm noticing so far, I plugged it into iTunes today, and I noticed that I had a lot more space was used for apps. So I've got, I've got 24 gigs used and 31 available. So my phone's about half full right now. And that's with a pretty minimal camera roll because I set it up from scratch as a new device. But one of the reasons it's full, or it's as full as it is because I was using an app called Filmic Pro, which is a really great camera app. And the beauty of that app is that it lets you use an external USB microphone for the audio track on your video. So I use that at school all the time. We're doing a thing right now where we teach presentation skills. And one of the ways we do the assessment for that is we video record the pupils doing their assessment. So I use Filmic Pro on my phone and then transfer it over to our Google Drive to store it and edit it together and so on. And so I've got 6 or 7 gigabytes of just raw video footage from the kids' presentations that they did yesterday on my phone at the moment. So once I take that off, I'm probably about a third full. 64 gigs, 6 plus. See, I knew I wanted the 6 plus. I've been clear about that for a very long time. And the reason I'm clear about it is because back when the iPad Mini came out, I got an iPad Mini and I used it for 6 months or so. And I realized that what I wanted was not, in fact, a small tablet, but what I actually wanted was a much bigger phone. Because I didn't want to give up what I could do on the iPad, but the full-size iPad and the comfort and size of that. But I wanted something bigger than the phone that I had. And that's when I made the decision not to buy another iPhone until I could buy a bigger one. So I knew from the start that I wanted the 6 Plus. And we talked about some of the reasons for that last week. But it was really the iPad Mini that taught me that that was what I wanted out of a phone. It wasn't a small tablet I wanted. It was actually a bigger phone.
Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Aerohive Networks. Aerohive unleashes the power of enterprise mobility. Their proprietary technology is used all over the world. They have over 13,000 customers worldwide. They have a cloud-managed, controllerless Wi-Fi architecture. So there's no controller to worry about. There's no single way to take down your network other than the actual LAN dying. Plug in access points, you're good to go. You can host their management system on-site, off-site. I use their off-site. They host it for me. Log in from anywhere in the world, manage your network, push out changes, view information. Just works. It's fantastic. Check out them if you need any switches or certainly Wi-Fi as well. Aerohive.com, AeroHive.com. Again, that's AeroHive.com. So thanks to Aerohive for sponsoring the show this week. You know, and this is something that I, you know, really struggled with. And again, this is, you know, I don't know if this is just me being OCD or into technology too much, or if I think about it because it's like, I guess it's like somewhat what I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before we saw the phones, I said, I want the big one. After the announcement, I wanted the big one. After I saw cases, I didn't want the big one. And I've had a chance to play with a 6 Plus on 2 occasions. My boss's son got one. He got the 16 gig, which drives me nuts. 16 gig, 6 Plus. And yeah, it kills me. And then I helped someone migrate from a 4S running iOS 6 to a iPhone 6 Plus running iOS 8 over iCloud today. And that actually worked, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really worked. That's kind of amazing. And so, I've played with it multiple times. And then, I've even struggled here recently. Like, my wife has an iPad Mini, and I pick it up, and I think, look, this is nice. Like, I missed this. But, you know, and I kind of can't make up my mind what's my favorite of any of the devices. You know, there are times I think, like, I want to get a Mini for my next iPad. There are times I think, no, I love the full-size iPad. I want a bigger one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, I get that sense. I try not to touch iPad Minis too much just in case I like it by mistake. I think that's where the 6 Plus kind of fits in for me, is that it satisfies that want for something a little bigger when, for casual use and portable use and so on. And increasingly it feels like the iPad is what I sit down to at a desk. And where that leaves the Mac is an open question as well, of course, but that's another show for another time. I mean, one of the things that I found interesting when I've got the 6 Plus and a colleague at school got the 6, and, you know, for the first 5 days of the 6s being out, I had only ever seen a 6 Plus. I'd never seen a 6 in the flesh. And once I actually held one, I literally could not perceive it as being any bigger than the iPhone 5. I held it in my hand and I thought, that's just exactly the same size as an iPhone 5. Even though it's obviously not. And even when you put them side by side with a 5, it's obviously bigger, but it just feels so small by comparison to the 6 Plus that I actually felt, well, that just looks like an iPhone 5 in my hand. So it's very confusing not to have come to the thing by holding them both side by side and then making a decision. Making that decision first and then seeing the supposed larger iPhone actually made it look very small by comparison. So I feel I'm almost acclimatized to the size of the 6 Plus. A lot of people have asked me, isn't it just too big? And I think the way I'm kind of thinking about it now is that I would never recommend to anybody that they should go out and get the 6 Plus unless they had already either said, I want a phablet-sized phone, I love those Samsung Galaxy Notes, but I don't want to get Android, or if they had articulated to me some kind of use case that is directly addressed by having a bigger phone. For example, you know, older people who want to use screen zoom to have everything larger on the screen, that would be one situation where I would say, yeah, you might want to look at the 6 Plus. But I think for most people who have come from other iPhones to the 6 and the 6 Plus, I would say, probably, you know, I don't know if you feel this badly, but the 6 feels more like a continuation of the iPhone 5, whereas the 6 Plus feels like a sort of new hybrid device that's somewhere in between. Does that seem like a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, the 6 is still predominantly feels, I mean, when you, I mean, certainly it's not as easy to use it one-handed, but yeah, it feels like an evolution where the 6 Plus, I mean, you could even say it's a mini iPad mini.
Yeah, I mean, the 6 still feels kind of like phone class, doesn't it?
Yes, that's a great word, yeah. Phone class. And, I compared it to like a Samsung Galaxy S4, whatever number they're on. It looks very similar in the size, and it's certainly bigger than the 5S. And I can tell it's bigger than the 5S, like certainly using things Fantastica was a great example. Like, it's actually been updated for the new displays. And you know, you feel like you can see more. And I think that's a thing to remember on both devices is we don't have many apps. You know, we have a lot that have been updated for iOS 8, but there's a difference between being updated for iOS 8 and taking advantage of the new screen size. And so in most apps that have taken advantage of the new screen size are just, you know, allowing you to see more. The question will be, you know, a year from now, are new workflows available that are drastically more comfortable on the 6 Plus than they are the 6? Or do developers just kind of stay in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the key things to say at this point in time about the iPhone 6 Plus is that many applications do not make sensible use of what that screen can do. And I think that one of the things that I feel you could see a change coming is that the sort of traditional iOS design model of buttons across the bottom of the screen and then content all the way up the middle, I feel like that's not ideal for this device because when I hold it in my hand and, you know, everybody says they've got normal sized hands, but I have larger than normal hands. One of the things I notice is that when I'm holding it in one hand, I can't reach the opposite bottom corner of the screen. So I can't actually activate all the buttons on the lower toolbar just using one hand. So it feels to me like there's a possible design model whereby the design is actually sort of rotated 90 degrees so that the control buttons or the tab buttons are actually down the side of the screen. If you imagine something like Tweetbot on the Mac where you've got a small strip of icons down the left and then content on the right, the iPhone 6 Plus is actually big enough to support a design like that. And if you look at something like Evernote, which has been updated for the larger screen, but doesn't really take advantage of it, I think that's maybe a good way to sort of express that difference. There is room for them to do something like that down the edge of the screen, because the edge is reachable all the way up and down, whereas the opposite bottom corner is more difficult to reach. So it certainly does have some changes in handling over the iPhone 5, but I think the trade-off is worth it, but it's very important to be aware that it is a trade-off. It's not an unalloyed good thing to have this bigger screen. There are things that you will miss or potentially lose out on. It certainly doesn't feel as stable in the hand as previous generations did, because you really just cannot clamp it in your hand the way you can with a 5, or presumably a little bit more with a 6 as well.
Yeah, I look at it very similar the way I look at Macs now. That there's 13, there's 15, I guess. Oh, I'm sorry, there's 11, 13, and 15, and you know, none of them are better than the other. They all do different things. You know, the 11 inch is highly portable. 15 inch is, I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's your workhorse. That's what the video editors use in the field. That's what our video editors here use. I use the 13. It feels like a nice sweet spot. And so all of them have compromises. The iPads, the mini versus the Air versus the presumed coming 13 inch, 12.9 inch or whatever they're saying it's going to be, they all have compromises. And so, I would never say, I think you'd agree that you'd never say that one is better than the other. You know, are there features of a 15-inch MacBook Pro Retina that are better than, say, the 13-inch Air? Well, sure, there are spec differences, and certainly it's more powerful, but it's also not as light. Screen is bigger, but bigger isn't always better, depending on your situation. So, you know, I think we're just kind of evolving that way to phones, and I think that's what's kind of thrown a lot of people for the loop, is because, you know, we started with the big iPad and we kind of worked our way down, and so it was kind of easier to see, well, this was like the standard size, and we worked our way down to the mini. Well, we had this phone size, then just all of a sudden, you know, we went on this trend of phones getting bigger. You know, we had the Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell phone years ago, and then we got down really small to the, you know, the, what was it, the yeah. Samsung Chocolate or some of these other, you know, incredibly tiny phones, and we were working our way back up. And so I think it's challenging to people, because they may say, well, of course I want the biggest phone. I mean, of course, because I want to be able mm-hmm. to see the most. I love my phone. I love what I can do. So of course I want the biggest phone. But there is a difference. And you can have someone that's an extreme iOS power user, extreme productivity master, that the mm-hmm. the 6 Plus is not for them. And I think that's why you said it's important to say, I'm never going to tell someone carte blanche, go get the 6 Plus. Because, you know, there's a chance they might not like it. You know, will they always love the 4.7?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sure that anyone would love that phone. But there are people who will absolutely love the 5.5 even more, and there are people who like it a lot less, because mm-hmm. it's not as portable. You know, in using it today, I would sit there and hold it, and I would, you know, pocket it. I always know when the 5.5 yeah. is in my pocket. You know, certainly if I'm wearing slacks or jeans, and I don't wear skinny jeans. You know, I know people that do. I do not wear skinny jeans. And so when I sit down, like I have slacks, you know, Old Navy branded khaki pants mm-hmm. today. I mean, just very run of the mill. When I put that 5.5 in my pocket and I sit down,
yeah.
I very much feel that.
You never don't notice it, particularly sitting down. I find standing up and walking around, not too bad, but definitely sitting down, I find myself taking it out of my pocket a lot more and leaving it on the table rather than keeping it in my pocket all the time.
You know, but with the 4.7, it again, like we've said, it feels like an evolution of the phone. Like, you know, you put it in your pocket, you don't really feel it. And I think it just largely depends on what you want.
I think more and more with technology, you've got to have a quite detailed conversation about what it is you want to do. You know, it was, in times past, it was very simple. You know, Steve Jobs made it very simple. You know, desktop or laptop, pro or consumer, is dead obvious what you walk out the store with. Whereas today, it's really not obvious what you walk out the store with. You know, do you want MacBook Air? Do you want iPad Air? Do you want iPad Mini? Do you want iPhone 6 Plus? You know, there's all kinds of trade-offs. The conversation gets longer and longer and longer, possibly for the better. I mean, when you're serving the number of people that Apple are serving, you've got to give options. You know, this isn't the same Apple that Steve Jobs ran. There's so many more people with so many more different use cases that you've got to build these options now in a way that, you know, back when Apple was selling 350,000 Macs a quarter, that wasn't a problem, right? It was a simple market to serve in some ways compared to what it is now, where it's, you know, there's just billions of people buying stuff all over the place. So, throw in a few other things I've noticed about the 6 Plus. It is on absolutely on the upper limit of what most phone things are designed for. And by phone things, I mean things like car mounts and tripod clamps and mobile phone pockets and bags and all those things. It's beyond for some of them, but certainly I've found that like my dashboard mount on my car, it just fits the 6 Plus and no more. I mean, you've got to stretch it out to its absolute limit, but it does fit the 6 Plus not too badly. So it's anything bigger than that, I think you'd have to start redesigning some of these things. But for most things, it just about fits and no more. So it's pretty tight. Also, I can confirm that mine is not bent. Some people have been fussing about the possibility of these things bending. I can see why people think that, but it hasn't happened so far for me.
Before we move on, let's thank our next sponsor of the night is the fine folks at Jamp Software. Jamp provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They have a great app called Casper Focus that allows teachers to take control of their classroom from their iPad. Allows them to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to the class, choose and distribute iBooks, and they can even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. So if you want to learn more about Jamp, go to outofschool.net and look for the show notes for this episode. This is episode 104. They have a special URL in the show notes, and that lets the folks at Jamp know that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamp for sponsoring the show this week. Well, you know, I wish I didn't care so much about this, but I've never cared about the iPad size as much as, like, I would kind of waver back and forth. But I guess it's because the phone is an extremely personal device, because it's the device you have with you most of the time, every waking moment. It's your primary camera. It's the primary way I communicate with the world. It's the device outside of my Mac, in kind of like work settings, you know, at my desk. It's the device that you use the most. And so I think people are, they want to get the most out of it, but they're also scared of getting the wrong thing, because it's not as simple as, I mean, for most people, it's not even like they could, get a new one the next year. Most people are buying it for 2 years. I know there's the new things like the AT&T Next and whatever Verizon has, where you pay monthly for it and get a new one every year. But it's just a highly personal decision, I guess, as a, I don't know if say a lame way to say it, but it's, I don't know.
I think it reflects, you know, the number of times you touch this device in a day compared to any other computer that you own. You know, I think as devices get smaller, and by smaller I mean, you know, come down from desktop computers to laptops to tablets to phones and then to smartwatches, obviously, the smaller the device gets, the more likely you'll have it with you and the greater number of times you will touch it in a day. And I think if you were to count how many times you unlock your phone in a day, it would probably be in the hundreds. And if you think how many times you're going to interact with your Apple Watch when the time comes, you're going to touch that thing a lot as well. Whereas the iPad, you touch it a lot, but nothing like as much as your phone. And your Mac, you maybe sit down at that 15 or 20 times in a day and open it up or unlock it or whatever. The number of times you type your Mac password versus holding your Touch ID button, very, very different set of numbers. So it's a device that will be everywhere with you and you will interact with the most. And I think it's important that people, certainly in this world, which is new to most Apple users, take the time to really think through which one it is you want to get, because you don't want to be left with regret and inconvenience if you do go for the 6 Plus and you just find it too unwieldy for your use case. But speaking of use case, I think it's probably worth talking about some of the experiences that we've had in terms of how have these new phones affected the kind of things that you would do on a phone versus what you might have done on a tablet or on a Mac before. I'll throw my first one in, which is that last night I sat on the sofa and I worked through my entire inbox replying to and filing messages from my phone. And that's a use case that I have never really gotten comfortable doing on a phone. So, I mean, certainly I'll tap out a one-line reply to certain emails and I'll archive and delete emails from my phone. But I've never really sat and worked through an inbox on the phone on the way that I did the other night. So that's one use case that I'm finding is now more approachable on the phone than in previous times with previous sizes of device.
And I actually did presented the other night from my phone. And I know it's not even that much bigger than my Vive, but I found it, you know, I had a 14-slide keynote and I thought, I'm just not taking my iPad up there. I don't need it. And it was absolutely wonderful. And again, yeah. I never presented for my old phone, so I may have felt the same, but it just finally felt big enough to kind of that be my main device. Now I am one to mm-hmm. have powered through 30 emails, each requiring responses from my phone. I've always been a very fast thumb typer. In fact, many of my blog posts are done on my phone. I can type in some ways faster on my phone than I can my iPad. Now, certainly, mm-hmm. If I want to use my iPad, I'm going to actually do the turn it landscape and let's do it QWERTY style, where I will thumb type with the best of them on my phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. The way I've always looked at this, and I've mentioned this many times on the show, but I think it's still very useful, is that as devices get smaller, the complexity of the task that you can do on that device or the time you can stand to do it is reduced. So going from a desktop computer to a tablet, you can stand to work on a spreadsheet, but maybe not for as long as you could sit at a desktop. And then going to the phone, that brings that boundary further down, so you can still work on Keynote on your iPhone, but for less time. You know, it's really just about fixing typos and tweaking slides rather than creating a new deck from scratch on a 3.5 or 4-inch phone. But I find with the 6 Plus, that pushes that phone boundary out a little bit more, so that I feel like I can sit and do a bit more on my phone. I think Keynote is, in particular, is very, very usable on an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, particularly a 6 Plus, I think. It hasn't been completely redesigned to be a different app on the 6 Plus yet, but it has been updated for the screen size. So you get, the way you can tell this on the iPhone 6 Plus is when you go into Landscape, you get that extra keyboard with the additional keys on the left-hand and right-hand side. If the app hasn't been updated for the new device, it doesn't get that keyboard until it has. We'll talk more about that keyboard in a little bit, but that's one way that you can tell that an app has been updated for the big screen.
Well, I think, you know, that's one of the keys long-term for the iOS line is, do we see in the next 2 to 3 years, do we see the distinction of iPad and iPhone apps go away? And does the idea of everything is a universal app? And it needs to scale regardless, because, you know, there are apps on the iPad that totally make sense on an iPhone 6 Plus. Mm-hmm. But, if they're an iPad-only app, they can't run.
Yeah. Yep. I think we've been in this situation for many years now in iOS, where we've had this hard distinction between tablet apps and phone apps, and never the twain would cross over that boundary. And I think that is increasingly looking like a difficult long-term proposition, that it seems to me that many apps could easily, you know, we've already gone from full-size iPad to iPad mini, and it's clear to me that, for example, say like the new OmniFocus on the iPad, I would much rather have that on my iPhone 6 Plus than the iPhone version of OmniFocus, which currently is scaled up from the version that ran on the 5 and the 4S, which is sort of ridiculously large, and the white space is just too great right now. You don't see enough on the screen to justify having that big screen. So, obviously, developers have only known about this phone for 10 days, so this shouldn't really be seen as a criticism of developers just yet. But I feel like that boundary is slightly arbitrary. And even apps that are universal, there are some apps where you get additional functionality if you install that universal app on a tablet that you don't get if you install it on an iPad. The classic example is iTunes U, where if you have your iTunes U app, the same app installed on an iPad, you get editing features for your courses, whereas if you install it on a phone, you don't get those editing features. And the iPhone 6 Plus is still reported to applications by the operating system as a phone. Therefore, they treat it just the same as they would treat an iPhone 5 in iTunes U's case. It restricts that functionality so that I can edit a course on my iPhone, even though it's perfectly feasible that I could want to and actually achieve that task on the phone. So time will tell to see just how that boundary becomes more permeable. But it's tricky times for apps where they are sold as two separate apps, one for the tablet and one for the phone, for sure.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor of the night. It's the folks at Tap Typing. The Tap Typing app teaches students to type on the iPad. It's got a structured curriculum with lessons ranging from beginner to advanced. They have a typing test for gauging improvement. And in addition to the virtual keyboard, they have support for all types of external keyboards and cases. Tap Typing is appropriate for all ages and supports multiple user profiles, which is extremely handy for cart-based classroom environments. After just 3 sessions in tap typing, beginners increase their typing speeds by over 60% on average. This minimal time investment yields a permanent boost to productivity and soothes one of the most painful aspects of the iPad user experience, typing. I own 81 copies of this app. We use it, it's how we teach typing now. Going forward. I mean, we absolutely love it. Kids, that's what they know, and we're trying to make them faster, and this is the app for it. Learn more about it. Go to gettaptyping.com. Again, that's gettaptyping.com, or just search for typing on the App Store. It's the absolute first result. It's great SEO. But again, I want to thank folks at Tap Typing for sponsoring the show this week. And it's almost even hard to make a distinction about the increase in how long you can do task, because I mean, mm-hmm. I can think of when I look at my phone now, there are minimal apps that have even been updated for the new, been updated for the new screens. And I'm not complaining to developers, because, you can think about something like Tweetbot that's a little bit more heavy on the custom graphics. That's not mm-hmm. as easy.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like Apple's been sort of whispering this in plain view for a long time, that these bigger phones are coming. And there's certainly been technologies, and there are technologies now, to help developers scale their apps up and down to bigger and smaller sizes. But that stuff doesn't happen overnight. So I'm willing to give it some time. I mean, there's clearly apps, I've already seen them, that seriously need an update for the new screen size. I was using Google Sheets the other day, and Google Sheets isn't the best iOS app at the best of times. But when you put it into Landscape, you get the old-style keyboard scaled up, and it was just it was actually unusably large, which is a strange thing to say about a touchscreen keyboard, that it was too big to use, but it took up so much space on the Landscape screen that there wasn't actually space left for any content to be seen, because they also put up additional bars above the keyboard in order to do separate spreadsheet functions now. So clearly some of those apps need to be updated, and I think when we talk about scaled up apps, this is actually one of my biggest complaints with scaled up apps, is that the keyboard moves around. So on a native 6 Plus application, and I think this is true in the 6 as well, Bradley, the keyboard is smaller, is proportionally less on the screen, because it remains kind of sized for your thumbs rather than proportional part of the screen. With the scaled up applications, they retain the old proportionality, so the keyboard is bigger on a non-updated application than it is on an updated application. And as a result, depending on which app you move into, your keyboard may be bigger or smaller depending on whether the app's been updated or not. And I find that quite disconcerting, because it puts the keys in different places. So it's been hard actually to get a grip on the actual physicality of this device just yet, because in some apps I have to type holding it a certain way, in other apps I have to type holding it a different way. And particularly in Landscape, when you get that enhanced keyboard versus when you don't, you've got to rethink how you type a little bit. So, am I right in saying, Bradley, you don't get that enhanced keyboard on the iPhone 6?
You do not.
No. And you don't get the 2-up display on the email and iMessages and things like that.
Well, that's correct. And and that was actually my next question to you, is prior to the iPhone 6 Plus, did you use Landscape View on your phone?
I did when it was supported, yeah. So if I was writing an email, for example, I would write it in Landscape, yeah.
See, I've never been a Landscape user. In fact, most of the time mine is locked to Portrait. Mm. And the only time I really would switch to Landscape is for video.
Right.
And of course, on my iPad, use Landscape all the time.
Yeah. This is another area where the distinction between iPad and iPhone is a little bit blurry. Because one of the other things that the iPhone 6 Plus does is it supports the upside down mode on the phone. Tell me if that happens on the 6. It certainly happens on the 6 Plus, but I can hold the phone upside down and the screen will rotate 180 from the normal portrait view. That's never been true on iPhones before. It certainly wasn't true on the 5. And I'm not sure if it's an iOS 8 thing or if it's an iPhone 6 Plus thing.
It's a 6 Plus thing.
So it doesn't happen on your phone, yeah. That's interesting. That's another way in which the 6 Plus has a wee bit more of the iPad nature in it than other phones as well. So it's an interesting time. I think I'm not crazy about the new enhanced keyboard because you've got sort of 2 columns of buttons down either side. When you're holding the phone in Landscape, it feels like in order to type letters, you have to sort of arch over those 2 columns on the outside and kind of reach into the middle of the phone to type. So I find that a little bit more of a strain. But I don't have enough apps that are updated yet to really have spent a lot of time with that keyboard. So I'd like to spend a bit more time before I make a strong opinion either way on it. But I think I haven't actually found myself using any of those additional keys yet. But again, more time will probably lead me to use some of them a bit more.
You know, of course, two things we haven't talked about is battery life and the camera. And battery life, I know, is better on the 6 Plus. And on the slides, it's, you know, doesn't look like that much more. But in real-world practice, that seems like a long time. The 6 battery has been fine. I mean, I kind of treat it the same way I did my 5. I charge it every night. Whenever I get in the car, I plug it up to charge. And then when I'm at work, if it seems like it's, you know, getting down to 50%, I will just stick it in the charger. I know that's probably not great for it, but that's just my habits where, you know, it seems like people that are using the 6 Plus, it's a non-issue.
Yes, that was my experience. What have I done with it this week? I mean, I've been fiddling with this phone nonstop. The way you do when you get a new device, I mean, it's always hard to make a judgment about battery life early in your ownership of a new device because you spend so much time playing with it. It always seems like the battery's really bad compared to the last one because you just can't stop fiddling about with it. I have noticed that has not been a problem this time. That even though I've been doing a lot of fiddling with the phone, that I don't think I've ever seen the 20% marker yet on the phone. It's held up very, very well. And I was at an event just yesterday where I was at a conference all day doing things to do with exams in Scotland. And I took my iPad, but I didn't use it. I just used the iPhone the whole day. I was taking notes in Evernote and doing different things. And I just had no concerns about the battery life at all. It was really great. So I have noticed things like getting to 7, 8 o'clock at night and I've still got 60% on the battery. And that's with more than normal use already. So I'm interested to see just how far that goes. I've got a couple of days next week where I'm actually traveling a little bit, so I'm going to... I'll obviously be using the phone quite a lot in those days and we'll see how it handles. I mean, clearly it's got a bigger battery. What is noticeable is it does take longer to charge. It does take longer to charge even when plugged in and locked, but also say you've got it on your dashboard in the car. Journeys in which I would have expected my phone to get back up to 100%, sometimes it hasn't quite gotten there yet. And I think that's something that will be a little bit noticeable, is if you want to quick charge your phone, it will take a bit longer than it has in the past. The iPhone has always been quick to charge because it has traditionally had quite a small battery. This battery is quite a lot bigger, so it does take a bit longer to charge.
So it's a throwback to the iPad 3.
A little bit, yeah. It feels like it's not quite as bad as that, but it does take that step up of there is clearly more capacity here. So, and particularly when you're plugging it into existing chargers that you sort of know how they perform with existing phones, you notice that these chargers take a bit longer to fill up the phone.
Well, and certainly if you bring, it does support the faster charging if you use the iPad charger. And of course, I've done that for years. I've done that for years charging my phone. So if you're traveling, just take your iPad charger and, you know, it'll obviously charge a little faster. But
yeah,
you know, so I think for a lot of people, you know, battery and then camera, I mean, obviously we love these cameras. How blown away by the camera have you been?
I've never seen anything like it on a phone. It's as simple as that. I've been completely blown away by it. And I think I mentioned either last week on the show or on Twitter, but they kind of skipped over it a little bit in the keynote. But to me, as somebody who has been involved with photography for a long time and has used, you know, DSLRs and so on, the one thing that stood out to me in the keynote was they mentioned that they now have face detection autofocus on top of the contrast detection autofocus that they've traditionally used in cameras this small. And face detection autofocus is a much faster way of focusing because it tells the lens just how far away you need to move in order to focus the object. So I've been completely amazed by how fast and how accurate the focus is on this camera. And that's always been something that's been hard on smartphones, is they're slow to focus and they're a bit bulky about focusing correctly in low light. This thing is just sharp all the time, snaps into focus really, really well. And that's been the first thing that's really surprised me. I don't know, have you noticed the same thing?
Absolutely. I mean, the pictures I took at our playground opening, they look like they were not taken with a phone. You know, when I'm comparing it to my Nikon camera that I have, they look identical. And to be able to have that in my pocket, I mean, it's just amazing. And, you know, and then it's one of those things I really would love to see this come to the iPad, this kind of camera come to the iPad, because, you know, in the classroom that could, you know, again, imagine doing a leaf project. You could get even more detailed on the leaf and you could explain even more about what it is. Of course, I don't know if we'll ever see that in the iPad because it costs so much less.
Yeah, no, I was very, very surprised when I started using it. I did a couple of things. We were at a birthday party, and it was in my mother's house, and it's a place where I've been to many birthday parties in the past and have taken photographs with many generations of camera over the years at the same place, in the same room, under the same lighting conditions, and I could not believe. Yeah, I just, there's a group of people, and I just sort of reached over and just kind of fired off a few photographs, and I could not believe that every single one that came back was pin sharp in focus. Now, because it was quite dark, some of them were blurry because of long exposure times, but it wasn't because of the focus sharpness at all. They were all bang in focus all the time, and I was really, really impressed by that. And then later on, we did some other photography back home, just in a room with one light bulb, and every single photograph came out sharp. And that's something I've never experienced before, not even on an iPhone 5 or 5S, when we've used those kind of cameras. It's a massive step up in terms of the focusing quality and the low light performance, not just from the sensor, but from the mechanism as well that's available. And this is one thing that does actually differentiate the iPhone 6 from the 6 Plus, is that the 6 Plus has optical image stabilization in the lens. And I haven't really had an opportunity to really work in serious low light just yet with this camera. There's talk on the internet that the optical stabilization doesn't make a huge difference to the low light performance of both cameras. I've seen some comparisons they both looked very good, and maybe the 6 Plus gives you just that a little bit more, but I think the big upgrade for everybody is this new phase detection autofocus. Is going to make everybody's photographs a whole lot sharper.
So you're saying that, you know, if you want, you know, if you're really on the fence and you really don't think you want the big phone, but you want the best camera, you shouldn't feel like you're getting a bad phone by not getting the 6 Plus.
No, I think that's certainly my sense of what I've seen so far, is that the 6 is in no way, apart from in its actual specs, I suppose, it's not producing inferior results. It may not have one particular function, but I think for anybody coming from any previous iPhone or indeed any other smartphone, I think, apart from perhaps some of the high-end Nokia phones, the addition of this new autofocus system is going to be such an improvement that to get that last 4 or 5% and having to take the 6 Plus when you don't want the 6 Plus, I don't think that's a good trade-off. I would certainly suggest that if you want the 6, get the 6 and be happy with the camera that's on that. If you want the 6 Plus, get the 6 Plus and you'll get that last few additional percentage. But I don't think it's enough to really sway the decision either way, and certainly not enough to outweigh any misgivings you might have about the size and handling of the iPhone 6 Plus.
You know, one of the things that's new to you and I is Touch ID, which I, you know, especially with the integration with 1Password, in day one, it's absolutely incredible to me. It's been pretty flawless for me.
I've been extremely impressed with Touch ID, and I've also been very impressed with what a kind of oblique fingerprint you can give it. You know, you can stick the tip of your thumb right on the button, and instead of giving it the full thumb pad, just give it a little bit of your thumb and it will still recognize it correctly. It's super impressive. And you're right, the integration with the apps, Evernote's got it as well for premium subscribers. You can unlock these critical apps with your Touch ID. I can see that being a feature that in future, that should be user configurable, that potentially every app could be configured to require Touch ID before it opens up. Now, I'm not saying that you want that for every app, but for example, many people might want that for email. So imagine you could hand over your phone to a child and they could not get into, say, your email, your contacts, or your calendar without providing a Touch ID button. That would be something that I think, you know, would have a lot of merit in future operating systems.
Absolutely. And I've even tried to use it on my iPad accidentally.
Yeah, I have not done that yet, but I'm already noting the lack of it on my iPad.
So, you know, kind of wrap up here. Both phones are fantastic. You obviously, if you don't have it yet, you're not making the day one decision. Try to get a hold of both of them just to hold. I mean, David Sparks had a nice article on his website today that he's got one coming in the mail today, and he's had some time with both of them, and he's actually concerned he may have the wrong one. You've got a 14-day return policy. If you buy one, you don't like it, return it, and hopefully you can find the other one. But both devices are incredible. It really comes down to personal preference and what you want to do with the device. Do you want it to be an evolution of the iPhone 5, 5S, or are you looking for something entirely new?
Yeah, I feel with the 6 Plus right now that, like, today, on this very day that we're recording, this phone is not doing enough to justify its size. But I do believe that in time to come, developers will do enough to take advantage of this additional screen space that it will become an incredibly powerful portable computing platform. Right now, I'm waiting for a lot of apps to get updates, and not just simple updates that stretch everything out a little bit and call it a day, but actual updates that enhance the functionality of the device, such that carrying around that additional screen space really gives you additional power. And I can see that already in some of the apps. For example, one of the ones we didn't mention yet, but I really like, is the iOS 8 Photos app. And some of its editing features are incredibly powerful. And I posted a few pictures to Instagram of family members and the kids, where I had taken photographs that I thought were really, really good and had tweaked them in the Photos app in iOS 8 and got really great results. And it was a real pleasure to edit those photographs right on the phone. In times past, I would have transferred a lot of that data to the iPad and edited it there because of the larger screen. But now I'm finding that on the phone, it's just another one of those slightly more complex tasks. It's much more bearable once you get a bigger screen into the mix as well. And of course, the screen is such high quality on the iPhone. They made a big fuss about that it's sRGB accurate and so on, that I think it's a really great little computer to work on. If that's all you have with you, you can actually get a lot more done than trying to transfer it over to another device and work on it there.
Well, shall we leave it there for this week?
Yeah, I think it's something that's going to develop over time. I'm enjoying it already, particularly the areas that are updated, but I think clearly developers are going to have to do work, not just for the 6, but specifically for the 6 Plus, that it does have to be considered a little bit differently from the 6 and certainly from any previous iPhone as well.
Yeah, just as we don't want to see, what we don't want to see happen is, like, we don't want to see, like, if we see an iPad app that we can tell, that's just the phone app blown up. They're not taking advantage of the screen. That's what we don't want. And, you know, that's what Android devices have largely done over the years. And I guess you could, call that responsive app design. But you also have to take advantage of the unique features. And the question is, will developers, you know, have enough of an incentive to do that?
Yeah, I think it will also take some time for Apple to make enough of these devices that people get them in their hands and start emailing developers and saying, hey, what about your app on this big device? Because I think one of the analysts pointed out that they're probably only building one 6 Plus for every 4 6s that they make. So it's going to take some time for the 6 Plus to reach critical mass, but I think the smart money seems to be on the idea that once Apple gets into China with the iPhone 6 Plus, that's going to be a huge hit over there. Of course, that's kind of the area of the world in which phablets, if you like, have kind of had the most traction, is in that area. So I think it's going to be interesting times over the next sort of 6 months to a year to see, A, who comes out with brand new apps for phones of this size, but also who does the best job of updating their apps to be, you know, fully usable on these bigger screens. Watch this space.
Time will tell, and hopefully we'll get some information in a few weeks about some bigger iPads, and we can think through this a whole lot more.
There will be much more to talk about, I'm sure.
Well, let's leave it there this week. Thanks to our sponsors, Aerohive, Tap Typing, and Jamp Software. Again, I'm Bradley Chambers. You can find me on the web at chambersdaily.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.